Hello, this is Kay Ballard, and I'd like to welcome you to Women Are Not Funny Radio. This is the radio show on the Internet where we try to disprove our premise. Now, sometimes we're fortunate and we come close. Today, I don't know. I had high hopes, but I was just speaking with today's guest, and she's certainly not going to be slapstick today. I mean, she's feeling a little bit above the fray because she was interviewed by USA Today today, as she said. And so, you know, she's a little full of herself today. I don't know if we'll be able to bring her down or not. I'll do my best. That's all I can do. So a few things to talk about because I have this habit. Item one, the voiceover. Still no voiceover. One of the things that I want to reveal to you is that in the process of putting together our season two voiceover, yes, we bought the arrangement of Rossini's William Tell Overture called William Tell Tricycle. It's a little heavy on the glockenspiel. Maybe it sounds a little bit like romper room. Shouldn't that influence who we get to do the voiceover recording? We have several options. They're all good, and we just can't decide. Two men, three women, they all sound different. Maybe we should put it to a vote. But I promise you that sometime before the end of season two, we shall have a voiceover intro. And that will just be disappointing to me because I won't be able to talk about it anymore. And item two, always Anne Curry. And I believe, this is, no one's told me this, but I just have this sense of things that some of you are getting a little bit suspicious about why I talk about her every week. You know, her interview method is so annoying to me, and my interview method is so like hers, and I think you realize that when I say something like that, not only am I managing to be charmingly self-deprecating, but what it's really more of a rhetorical strategy to compare myself with Anne Curry, isn't it? To suggest that somehow I am in the same caliber as this career, top-level NBC broadcaster who's very popular, very well-liked, despite the fact that, just like Kay Ballard, she doesn't let anyone else get a word in edgewise. So you may be suspicious that all I'm trying to do in talking about her every week is bring some notoriety to myself, and I think it's working. I mean, possibly people are listening, possibly people at NBC News. Possibly they're going to put me on a salary because, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity, and I'm probably pumping up Anne Curry's ratings just by referring to her every week. Don't know. Item three, last week's guest, Martha Giffen. Oh, my goodness. Was she ever funny, and was she ever popular? She will never see the light of day at Women Are Not Funny again. You know, it's just, she was very open in her desire to take over the show. Do you not recall? I mean, one thing I did love about Martha is that she was very forthcoming about the fact that she was just using me and Women Are Not Funny as a stepping stone to something better. You know, she told us that she really would like to take over the Larry King Live show. And when she said that, I felt terrible, quite frankly. I felt awful because I know that I just let you down. I feel like I let you down because you depend on me for state-of-the-art arrogance. And, you know, now I think Martha proved that I have a ways to go. And so that was a little disturbing. But good things came from it, okay? That's what I would say. Despite the fact that Martha Giffen was a very, very amusing guest and thereby somewhat troubling to me, there was some good that came from it. One is the stepping stone test. I think I'm going to be more aware of guests who might use me and Women Are Not Funny as a stepping stone. And I think that's the kind of disclosure that we need right from the beginning. So I'm going to start trying to determine that about all my guests. You know, my eyes are open now, thanks to Martha. And also the possibility that one of my guests would come on and try to take over the show. I mean, Martha said she saw it as a tryout. So that's another thing that I'm going to be looking for. I'm going to be on the alert. But here's a good thing that really came from last week's show and from having Martha as a guest. You know, there's a lot of content being produced. In fact, today's guest, Michelle Woodward, said that her regularly scheduled call, she didn't do it today simply because she was going to do this call and she was going to direct people here. I mean, that is a very considerate stance. There's so much for us to read and listen to, goodness knows. So as I was thinking things through last week, and I was thinking rapidly, let's face it, because the show is going on, all kinds of things were going on, but I came up with something I consider rather brilliant, and I'm calling it the Accomplish Something Initiative. Because last week, with that lousy guest, Martha Giffen, she and I determined that we could do something during that hour. We could actually accomplish something during the hour. And, you know, with so much content being produced, with people leading such busy lives, I think the world would be very grateful if every week on Women Are Not Funny, we don't attempt to accomplish something. We actually accomplish something. And what I mean by that is we can think of stuff, we can say stuff, and we can do stuff. And so that is what we're going to be doing going forward on Women Are Not Funny. And I want to credit Martha Giffen for that, the Accomplish Something Initiative. So, as you know, February was divorce month. No longer. It's still February, but it's not divorce month. I killed it. I killed divorce month. I killed divorce month dead in its tracks. And what that means is that divorce month is over. It means nothing else because divorce is not dead. Divorce is not over. Please do not be confused by this. Divorce is still around. There will still be divorces. There will probably be divorces this very month. But divorce month is over. Now, this is something of a problem, I think. And we'll discuss why divorce month is over, and we'll discuss what it all means. Goodness knows, there will be no shutting us up. But when I invited Michelle Woodward, our featured guest, when I invited her here almost 2 months ago, it's when we set this time for her appearance, when we set it up, I told her it was going to be divorce month. And I told her we were going to talk about divorce. And so now she's here, probably just very excited to talk about divorce, and it's very unlikely that we'll even mention it. And I feel some guilt for that. But the good thing is, since Michelle Woodward is a master certified life coach, if I'm feeling guilt, who better to help me cope with it than Michelle? So, Michelle, it's not divorce month, but you're here anyway.
And so all those divorce jokes, I can't use them now. Boy, you set me up here, Kay.
I know. It was a terrible waste of time to get those together, wasn't it?
Well, you know, but it is always a pleasure to talk to you. And divorce, schmivorce, you know, we don't have to talk about that. We can talk about plenty of other things, so many things. And I'm not going to try to take over your show. I just want to say, Martha Giffen might, but not I. Not I.
Yes, that would be the last thing you would do. Now, let me ask you this, though, because I did say that I was going to ask all my guests going forward Are you using me or your appearance here as a stepping stone for something?
Absolutely.
And what would that be?
I have no idea, but it will definitely, I don't know. No, I am using this appearance here as a reason to not have to drive my children around after school. So, you know, there I'm being very honest with you. That's half of my job.
See, I am being used once again.
Yeah,
used, but at least you admit it.
Mm-hmm.
At least you admit it.
Yep.
So, speaking of those children,
mm-hmm.
because you did, after all. I mean, that's not my imagination. I didn't bring
mm-hmm.
them up.
No.
Well, Michelle has this fabulous blog, and she writes every Sunday. She writes sometimes in between, but every Sunday, those of us who subscribe, and I recommend that anyone who wants to, well, essentially be more like me, I would suggest that you subscribe to her blog, because that's one way to be more like me, because I read her blog every opportunity I get, and I always get it on Sunday. But, Michelle, this time, I saw something, and I just read it, and I thought, who does she think she's kidding?
About the pizza thing?
How did you know?
All right, so I know I'm a big nerd. And my children, I'm raising my children to be equally nerdalicious. But we were chatting one afternoon, and we were talking about how all the pizza companies are making these claims that they've changed their recipe and they've changed their ingredients and everything's different and give us a try, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we decided to give it a try. And so we ordered pizza from Pizza Hut. One pizza from Pizza Hut, one pizza from Domino's, one pizza from Papa John's. Same night, same ingredients, and we had a taste test. And it was a giggling, hootie mess. And we had a great time. And we decided, should we have a drum roll? If you guys had worked the music thing out, we could have a drum roll. But the drum roll was they all were horrible. So, you know, it was a really interesting experiment. And we will never probably do it again. But what did you think of my little experiment?
Well, I am so disappointed, because I was going to spring this on you. And you knew immediately what I was talking about. I think the thing that struck me was, I mean, I thought your pizza tasting thing was, you know, that was cool. That was okay. But your statement, yes, we eat pizza here, you know, I read that and I thought, this is drama. I mean, two teenagers and she thinks she's telling us something that they eat pizza.
Yeah. I think I said specifically not to shock anybody, but we eat pizza in our house. And,
yeah, exactly.
And that was really designed for all the food Nazis out there who happen to read my blog. Who thinks that, you know, it's horrifying to think that somebody orders pizza from Domino's and actually eats it. But, you know, such is the way of the world. What can I say?
Well, probably most of the 2 million plus who are listening, Michelle, 2 million people do not listen live on Friday afternoons. But we do have a replay. That's
right.
The thing, you know, that brings the numbers up. Some of them know you. Not everyone knows you, but some of them do. The ones who don't know you probably don't know that you're an extremely powerful woman.
Ah, I did not know that either, so thanks for sharing. I'm not as powerful as Ann Curry, I don't think.
Well, you know, I'm trying to bring her down.
Mm-hmm.
At some point there may be some power equilibrium there between you. But anyway, you have had a very interesting career and continue to, but you were that dreaded individual known as a Washington lobbyist.
Yes, I was. I was a Washington, you know, that could be actually a series of books. Like, do you remember Cherry Ames, Student Nurse? Like, I could be Michelle Woodward. I was a Washington lobbyist. That could be like a sensational tell-all kind of book. But, yeah, I was a lobbyist before lobbyist was a bad word, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I would say a public affairs advocate. How does that sound? I was a lobbyist.
Well, it sounds like a Washington lobbyist who
is trying
to pull one over on us. You know, when I moved to the East Coast and was started working in Washington, D.C., and I remember one of the first days there, I was just walking down the sidewalk, and suddenly it just washed over me. I said, oh, my goodness, I have become a Washington lawyer, the most dreaded human in the universe, a Washington lawyer. But it occurs to me that perhaps a Washington lobbyist is even more dreadful. Which do you think is worse?
I do think, you know, when they do the surveys of the most despised professions, mm-hmm. I think lobbyist is right there with tax, you know, IRS tax accountant or auditor. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm right in there with those kind of people. And even worse, Kay, is I live inside the Beltway. So I'm an inside the Beltway. Well, at the time I was an inside the Beltway Washington lobbyist. And whenever I'd hear, congressmen or senators rail against, you know, those people inside the Beltway, those moneyed special interests, I'd always think, gosh, you know, they're talking about me. And then I'd think about the time that they called me and asked me to give them money for their campaigns. And so there was a little dissonance there. I loved being a lobbyist, and it was a lot of fun. And I got a lot of – I actually think I did get a lot of good accomplished, or maybe that's just the way I'm telling myself in hindsight so I can sleep well at night. I don't know. It could go either way.
Oh, well, I think I'm certain that's true, and I'm certain it was a fascinating career, but – it didn't hold enough fascination to keep you, because now you are doing something, I would say, quite a bit different. Maybe you'll tell me otherwise, but as a coach, and not only a coach, but a master coach who also helps bring coaches into a coaching career, that's quite a change.
You know, in some ways it is, I guess. In some ways it isn't, because back in my lobbying days, for instance, a CEO would come to Washington, and I would coach him or her, most often a him, but I would coach, help them be prepared for their testimony before Congress, for instance, or help them figure out their message when they're going to go around and meet senators or congressmen in their offices. And it's a very similar, I think, to what I do when I help people, for instance, prepare for a job interview or prepare, you know, to have a difficult conversation with somebody. So in some ways, the skill set and the sort of strategic planning, the thinking is very similar. So it's not when I decided to become a coach, it felt more like I was stepping into something that I'd always done rather than making a big career shift. Does that make any sense?
Well, it makes a lot of sense, although, I mean, now are you doing most of your coaching in person, or are you doing most of it online, or is it a mix halfway
between? I do about 50-50, which sounds like something from, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but I do some of my coaching is in person here in the D.C. area, and some of it is on the phone with people really all over the world. I've had a client in Japan, which was interesting to find the right kind of time zone where we could both work. And I have a client in London right now, which is really great, and I'm so glad Skype exists. And so I try to mix it up, because this may also be shocking. It's shocking that I eat pizza, and it's shocking, too, that I'm an extrovert. I know that may floor you, Kay. But,
they're about equally shocking. But see,
yeah.
here's the thing that you've got to give me this.
Mm.
The thing that is different between the coaching and the lobbying. Jewelry.
Jewelry and really good shoes. You know, I wore really,
oh, really?
Good shoes when I was a lobbyist. Yeah, that was my big thing. I would say. the thing about the coaching that's so different from lobbying is that I'm the outcome is really dependent on one person. And when you're lobbying, when you're trying to get a law changed or a law passed, there are a lot of people who have to be involved. But if a person wants to change his or her life, it's just me working with that person, and they can make it happen. That's what's really different. It can be a real challenge, as you know, to move a whole group of people with so many diverse interests like Congress toward anything. But an individual, you know, can make a change. So that's what's different, and that's I really like that a lot because I can see that something's really happening, just like, you know, we're going to make something happen on, you know, Women Are Not Funny Radio.
Well, we are, and the main thing we're going to make happen is we're going to go for 3 chuckles per hour. We're going to get there. I would say we're just months away. You know, it won't be long. Mm. Now, the thing, you know, speaking of chuckling, apparently, back when you were a featured guest on the Social Media Soiree, Things That Are Scary edition, you told me that I gave you a bit of a chuckle when I said things that are scary. One thing that is scary is having a bunch of life coaches follow you on Twitter. And you thought that was amusing, but I was being completely sincere because I have picked this up from people. You know, when someone looks at their follow list and they see that suddenly they're being followed by 200 life coaches, they take that personally. Now, maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they should not. But you know how they take it? They take it as if the life coaches are like vultures, or they take it as if they themselves are in a shark tank being circled by sharks. And I don't think they hold anything against the life coaches, but they feel themselves that they are maybe, it's a little intimidating, they feel that they might be giving off signs in some way that they are in need of betterment.
It's a very Lord of the Flies moment, isn't it, when you find that 200 life coaches are circling with little, you know, pointy knives, sending you blog posts about how you can, you know, change your life in 3 easy steps. I can see where that would be slightly intimidating. I'm followed by quite a bevy of life coaches, and from time to time I find it a little startling.
Of course, Michelle, they're not trying to better you. They are trying to learn from you. They're trying to learn from you. They're trying to learn your techniques. They are essentially trying to use you as a stepping stone.
Now, are you sure it's that and it's not like a Three Faces of Eve kind of, you know, deal where they're really, you know, my real mortal enemy.
Your real mortal enemy.
And they're, you know, knocking me off. I don't know. I have no clue. But
it could be like that. It could actually be like that.
Well, the coaching industry, I mean, and it really is an industry, and it's really growing. And, you know, a lot of people are out there trying to make a business work, and Lord knows I try to help them make a business work. But there are quite a number of coaches, and a lot of them have decided to obviously get on Twitter. And so they're attracted to someone with as much fabulosity as you. That's all I can say.
That's my assessment. You know what? I really do not have the complaint of too many coaches following me.
Mm.
And I appreciate you saying that. I think just strange things happen on Twitter. You know, a lot of things are just randomly strange. When you and I first met, and we met on Twitter, and one thing it happened that, and it was really strange, and I'm going to just tell this, and I do it knowing it's going to humiliate you, but I just can't help myself. When you said I was your tech coach, essentially,
mm-hmm.
and I, you know, when I saw that tweet where you said I was your tech coach, I knew you had serious problems, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Technical problems.
You friended me out of sheer pity. Is that what you're saying? Just sheer pity?
No. Goodness, no. I was your friend, and that's why when I read that, I was concerned. I said, if she's looking to me for answers to her tech issues, this woman has a serious technical problem. But, you know,
I remember the first
that.
The first thing I ever tweeted to you, I believe, was I asked you if you were on the show The Mothers-in-Law, and how was that? Because I was kind of really wanted to find out about Eve Arden. But it turned out you weren't that Kay Ballard. So there you go.
Yeah.
And one thing.
And I forgave you that.
You did
forgive
it. That was very kind of you.
Yeah.
Very generous.
I really had no choice because that's the kind of person I am, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just big-hearted with an open mind.
Mm-hmm. I think those are the two things anybody who knows you would say. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, they might. And then the other thing, though, that I really, you know, I talked earlier about the possibility you might be using me. I really would like the opportunity to use you.
Okay. All right, and you're not doing it now? Is that what you're saying?
No, I've been using you the entire time so far, but I mean I want to continue in a more direct way.
Okay.
And you know, one of the things that you mentioned, I just wanted to kind of get this in here. You say a lot of coaches are looking to you, and I'm certain of that. And you know, they're looking at me as kind of a case study, I think. It's what they're doing, and that's, you know, that's cool. But there are so many interesting conversations that we could have around coaching, because I have some, you know, incredible stories about my own experience, you know, mainly as it would relate to coach marketing, you know, that kind of thing. And then I also have some insight, I believe, on how coaches could go about getting affluent clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just love to tell people about it, but only if they'd get out their credit card, you know.
Okay, we can make that work, Kay.
Yeah, I think there's just too much free content around. And I think coaches and aspiring coaches should really pay through the nose for the, you know, the real information that they can only get from people who are dedicated to giving them the only information they need to
right.
help them.
Yeah, and being completely serious for, you know, a nanosecond. You know, the truth is that very many coaches are women, and women often have a really difficult time saying this is how much it's going to cost you when it comes to their own personal service. So a lot of coaches are out there giving away free stuff because they're nervous, shy, embarrassed, uncomfortable with saying this is going to cost you this much. And I think whenever you give away anything free, if it comes from a real place of generosity, the market's going to receive it. But if it comes from a place of fear, you know, you might as well not do it at all. That's my own two cents worth. So
I am so glad you brought that up, because it's something I love to talk about. But from a little different standpoint, I've never been a coach. I'm the person in need of betterment. I really can't better anybody, but I definitely always need betterment. So I'm always the candidate to be coached. But what I can relate your remarks to is my own experience as a professional speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you do that as well. We're both keynote speakers. And I was telling someone the other day about who my competition is as a keynote speaker. So on one end is someone like Gwen Ifill,
mm-hmm.
okay, Jane Bryan Quinn. These are people I've been on the podium with, Olympia Dukakis. So they're, you know, they're on the one side. My other competition is women who are just so grateful to be asked to speak, you know,
right.
who speak free because they, you know, they just can't even imagine asking to be compensated for speaking when it was just such a high honor to be asked in the first place.
It's funny, I have a friend who was recently asked to go do a strategic planning meeting in Hawaii. And the person said, come out, do this meeting, and then we'll figure out your compensation. And I said to her, don't you go out there without money in your hand. And let me tell you why. because if you go out there and give it away for free, you're going to be like that girl that hangs out at the fraternity house. Everybody loves, but nobody takes home to their mother. And it's, you know, and I think that it's that valuing your own self and knowing, you know, if they decide that they don't want to pay what I'm asking them to pay, that's fine, right?
If, you know what? You're exactly right. But what women need help with, and men too, but particularly women, they need help in crafting the words and saying them.
Right.
They need some exact instruction in exactly what to say. But that's for another day, because what I want to talk about now, I mean, this is how I'm using you, and it's about talking, it's about words, and it's about how two professional women can interact badly and well. I have told people repeatedly that I am the accidental host of Women Are Not Funny Radio. And I am certain, Michelle, there is not a single person who knows me who believes that story. Except you, maybe.
I believe that story. I absolutely 100% are with you.
I know that you totally believe the story because you are in a unique position to believe the story. But anyone else who knows me thinks, okay, just, you know, loves to talk about herself. Why wouldn't she want to be host of Women Are Not Funny? She is not the accidental host. She is the purposeful host of Women Are Not Funny. Well, I am now. You know, now I've changed. I was the accidental host. I still claim to be the accidental host, but I actually like doing it a whole lot. And that is just a happy accident, because I was not planning to be host of this show, was I?
No, you were not.
In fact, what happened was Kamala and I had identified someone that we knew would be perfect as host of the show. We were persuaded of it, weren't we?
Yes, it was. You were absolutely definite.
And who I'm talking about, of course, in case you've forgotten, is you.
That's right. I have a misty watercolor memory of that moment, absolutely.
Well, I must tell the story that once we, particularly me, got it in my head that you were the perfect host for Women Are Not Funny Radio, I couldn't let it go. I absolutely couldn't let it go. And so, in my effort to persuade you, I sunk into something that you described, and, you know, at the time I thought it was harsh, but I think you were right, as browbeating, because, you know, I started out with, sure, you want to do this, and initially you kind of did, but then I think over the course of the time we were discussing it, you were making some changes in your, a little few changes in your own career path that made it look less attractive to you. But I would want anyone listening to know that I was unpersuaded by the fact that Michelle didn't want to do it. That I did not find that persuasive. Did I, Michelle?
No, you did not. despite all the evidence to the contrary, you kept going. You absolutely did.
I absolutely kept going to the point of being, you know, there is annoying, and then there's this point that's, you know, beyond annoying, where it's
I think it was really the moment when I compared you to my ex-husband. Was the moment that you realized, hey, maybe I should back off here for a minute.
Well, this is the, you know, we certainly do not want Women Are Not Funny to be educational, but we are in the Accomplish Something Initiative.
Oh yes, I forgot about that.
Yeah, we are in the Accomplish Something Initiative. So we are right now. What we're doing is we're talking about stuff,
mm-hmm.
And so the stuff that we are talking about is. How, and I would put it out there as, oh, see, it's almost getting educational.
We better knock that off.
The thing is, here's I'm going to just go there anyway. Here is what I would want someone to learn from my experience. don't get carried away by your own charm. That, you know, that is definitely something that I had to cop to. Then don't keep going when you're getting little signals that say, cut it out. And then here's where you came in, Michelle, and you handled it masterfully. You, instead of just merely being annoyed and put off, spoke up for yourself and explained it to me. You were very direct, you were very professional, and you were my friend. And what it meant was that the friendship was salvaged.
Right.
Because we had the ability to have a direct sort of communication and understand where each other stood. And to me, that is the most beautiful thing, because what could have happened and what typically happens is the person playing the Michelle part is annoyed but doesn't say so.
Right.
And the person playing the K part is just clueless, and she needs a clue. But you didn't let that happen. Instead, you respected me enough and cared for me enough and cared for the relationship enough and cared for yourself enough that you spoke up and told me what you were really thinking and told me that I was you. And you were very gracious in your anger. You were very gracious in the way you expressed it, and you were very clear. And I just, you know, I have so much respect and caring for you because of that. And to me, it is just a beautiful example of how two professional women can, if they are committed to it, how they can get it right.
Well, if they do make a movie of this interchange, you know, I think Deborah Winger should probably play me. That might be a good one. And I don't know who Kay would play you, but someone who's a real doll would be the right person. But, you know, I teach people all the time how to have difficult conversations and how to be right in the moment and know where your boundaries are and know what you want to get out. And I knew that, you know, I value you and I value our friendship, and that's not what I wanted to get rid of. I just wanted to be really clear that I didn't have the bandwidth or the space to do the kind of job that I would want to do where I am the host of a radio show. And, you know, what I think your point is just absolutely extremely well made is that there's something really wonderful about two professional women, you know, having that kind of a challenging interchange, but in a really mutually, dare I say it, loving and supportive way. And I just think, gosh, wouldn't it be great if other people could learn how to do that too? You know, be a good advocate for yourself, but care for the state of the relationship. Yeah.
And the thing that people miss, Michelle, so frequently is the idea that speaking up, they think that speaking up is going to harm the relationship, and it's just the opposite.
Right.
Speaking up is what permits it to continue and to happen.
Right.
Now, the rest of the story is that I ended up as host of the show, and actually, I am loving it.
Mm.
I mean, you know, let me tell you why. You've probably figured it out, but I'm not trying to make you feel bad that you turned it down. But
if that's a byproduct, it's okay.
Well, you know, in the first place, I'm able to adopt the Ann Curry method and do most of the talking, so I love that. And then I have had the ability to designate months. You know, as a certain month, like divorce month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of raw power, don't you think, to just be able to proclaim it divorce month?
I think yes, And I think the way you exert raw power is breathtaking in many ways. So how's that for?
Yeah. Yeah. And then not only can I designate it a certain month, I can cancel the month. You know, if for example, if it were divorce month and then I decided it should no longer be the divorce month, I can take care of that.
Wow.
And then also I can invent powerful initiatives like the Accomplish Something initiative.
Just don't let the power go to your head, Kay. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, it is pretty powerful, but, you know, there's one more thing, and that's the multimillion-dollar syndication deal. You know, that's coming down. It's coming down the pike. Mm-hmm. I can feel it. It's coming here.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely coming here. So you decided not to be the Women Are Not Funny radio host, but I just have a real strong feeling of wanting to encourage you in your comedy career.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I do. I've listened to you a good bit, and I wouldn't for a moment suggest that you are the only life coach or executive coach with a sense of humor. We know that's not true. We just know that's not true, right? But you have something about you, Michelle. You just exude warmth, and also you're funny.
Well, thank you. And I'll just have to try to figure out, you know, it's hard to be funny on demand. It would be a hoot. Well, you know, I did promise you when I declined the great honor, I did promise you I'd be a regular guest. So, you know, I'll be a regular guest on this show.
Oh, absolutely. You are a regular featured guest. And along with some people who are, you know, fascinating to me. I mean, that's the main, once again, the raw power.
The raw power being,
who would be.
You know, it just gives me goose flesh to just see you exert that raw power. It just, it reminds me of my lobbying days. Yeah.
Well,
you're just as powerful as Barbara Mikulski, but twice as cute. So.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's really not, that's, you don't even have to work it too hard for that one. But anyway, you probably are wanting to know something about my comedy career.
Yeah.
Since I talked about yours.
Tell me. Tell me about your comedy career. Tell me about, do you have any comedy products or anything coming out?
Well, as a matter of fact, Michelle, and that was really good, too. That was really smooth.
Thank you.
But,
you know, I worked in radio, so.
People, and you still are. You still are. Yeah, I actually, as it happens, I have a comedy divorce CD that is coming out. And, you know, it coincidentally, we were having divorce month because my comedy divorce CD, KK's Divorce, I'd Fall in Love with Anyone, was set to drop for February 14th, Valentine's Day. You may have heard of it.
I heard about that, yeah. It's practiced by pagan religions throughout the world, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's a day when you could think about chocolate.
Mm.
You know,
I think that I call that Tuesday. I'm not sure, but...
Well, anyway, Valentine's Day...
Divorce. It didn't happen on Valentine's Day, did it?
It didn't happen on Valentine's Day. And... Mm. You know, being a lawyer, I'm supposed to read the fine print, correct? Well, TuneCore, the distributor who was going to take care of the electronic distribution, they published on their website that you upload the material to them. 6 hours later, it's out to iTunes, Amazon, Rhapsody, all of the different electronic distributors. But the fine print is where it said, yeah, it goes out to them in 6 hours, but that doesn't mean they get it up on their website by then. So actually, we decided to postpone it, and it was just as well. We had some other things to do, and we're still working at it, working, you know, trying to get it ready to go. But I just thought it was kind of an interesting, once again, case study and something that maybe a coach would have some interest in because – what I have done here, I think you are uniquely set up to appreciate the beauty of this. I took a life failure, right? A lot of people would consider a divorce a life failure. I know that you as a coach would be devoted to helping that person not consider it a life failure, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Depending on the individual, because, no, I'm just kidding. But, no,
okay.
Really, I would not make it a life failure.
You would not make it a life failure?
Mm-mm, no.
Okay, but let's say there was a person who wanted to make it really melodramatic, and she wanted to, you know, whine about it, and she wanted to characterize it for radio purposes. She wanted to characterize it as a life failure. That would be different, wouldn't it?
Be totally different, yeah.
Okay, so let's say a woman takes a life failure, and then she turns it into a public failure, right?
Right.
And by that I mean how she turns it into a public failure is she makes a divorce CD, and then she, you know, says she's going to launch it on February 14th. She has divorce month, so then she doesn't launch it on February 14th. That's kind of a public failure, wouldn't you think?
Right. It's a heaping on of failure.
It's a heaping on of failure. Well, there's only one more kind of failure to come. That I can think of.
I'm on the edge of my seat to hear about this one. What is the next? What could possibly happen next?
Economic failure.
Oh.
No one buys it. So you take life failure, you shift into gear and make it public failure, and then you don't sell any, and so then it's economic failure. What would you call that? A failure.
That's a baked Alaska of failure. It's a dessert within dessert. It's failure within failure within failure. It is a...
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
It's
and it probably is something that the coaching industry, as you put it, could get pretty excited about.
I would think that, you know, you would be a one-woman full employment act for coaches just upon this failure. This you know, heaping on a failure. You're a one-woman employment act for coaches.
That is correct. But let me tell you why I should be really praised for that. I mean, besides the obvious. A one-woman, full employment act for coaches, that's pretty big in terms of economic impact. But I think that the coaching industry has recently taken a big economic hit. Huge.
Huge.
I think one of your assets, one of your really true best assets, one I would have to consider a financial asset, is gone. Vapor. Just total vapor. You know what I'm referring to, don't you?
I have no clue, but I'm trying to be charming. So go ahead and tell me.
Let me ask you this. I'm just curious. I'm going to talk about it one way or the other, but do you find this interesting, the idea that your industry has taken a huge hit and one of your most important financial assets is gone?
If I knew slightly what you were talking about, I could comment, but I have no clue. I'm totally
That was
clue.
A careful answer. That
yeah.
was a careful answer.
I was a lobbyist.
Okay,
so.
I know you have a coach, and I hope that she will coach you around that.
Okay.
You know, the fact that you would be on radio, and you would be maybe a little bit too cautious and careful.
Okay.
I guess she would coach you around that if that's something that was important to you that you wanted to work on. Otherwise, you'd probably just leave it.
Right.
Am I right about that?
If it caused me stress, then I would address it, and if it didn't cause me stress, I would not pay attention.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think you're being, a little cautious, and, and that's okay, Michelle. That's okay.
All right.
But here's where I see it, and I could be all wrong about this, but I so rarely am, and I'm just almost certain that there has been a big financial hit, a big loss, because this asset had tangible value, and that is the Tiger Woods example. You know, prior to us finding out that the man has a little bit of a friendliness problem, is the way I would refer to it. Prior to us finding this out, Tiger Woods was always charted out, if you will, mm-hmm. as the example of someone who was extremely competent at something and yet he would still hire a coach.
That's an excellent point.
I mean, that example, which had some, I'm saying it had some financial value, that was a financial asset to the coaching industry, that example crumbled. So here, all of these commentators, they're talking about all of the losses to Tiger of endorsements and so forth, completely ignoring the fact that the coaching industry lost a valuable financial asset, and that was the ability to refer to Tiger Woods as someone highly competent, yet someone who still hired a coach. It's gone. It's gone. Vapor.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point. And his friendliness, however, he was able to do without a coach. And look where that got him. I'm just saying.
Man, you're good. So what you're doing essentially is you're crafting a new, you're turning the Tiger Woods story into a new sort of financial asset for the coaching industry. You are an industry leader, aren't you?
It's what I do. What can I say? It's what I do. So, yeah, so, you know, had he had a coach to help him before he got involved with all these
friends,
women. I was even pausing on that one, but with all these folks, then maybe he would have had a different outcome. That's all I'm saying. That's about all I want to say. But yeah, so Kay, what's the deal? Is the divorce thing out now, or is it? Is it on the back burner? Are you saving it?
No. This is what I think is funny. But thank you for mentioning it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It is actually live on some of the, you know, places like Amazon MP3 and Rhapsody and eMusic. I don't think it's at iTunes yet, but our website isn't up and live. And one of the things that we're just having a real hard time with it because, you know, a lot of times in the world, the real world, where we all live, should we choose to. The thing to do is to determine a need and then fill it. And that is the way that you see, I'm teaching again, aren't I?
Yes. And I still can't stop thinking about Tiger Woods seeing a need and filling it, but that's a whole other conversation. So see a need and fill it with KK's divorce.
I guess the point is we kind of went backwards. We didn't do any sort of research to determine that there was a hungry nation, a hungry world for a comedy divorce CD about one woman's very personal experience with divorce, being me. And so it's not a case where there was a market and we stepped forward to fill it. Right?
I see.
So that is kind of the issue right now, is because we have this product, and we think it's cool. It's quirky. It's cool. Paula Kelly was the producer, and it's just kind of funny and fun and cool. And we have, my divorce is extremely successful because my divorce has a producer, a graphic designer, an artist, a press agent. My divorce has a website. My divorce is probably one of the most highly desirable divorces in the history of divorce. That sounds like hyperbole, I know, but it's what I do, Michelle.
Yes, that's
anyway,
true.
Anyway, KK's divorce, it's soon to be ready to go. It's going to be great. But we just really are expecting to sell about a dozen of them. And so given that we have such high expectations, it's hard to know how many thousands of dollars to put into PR and marketing. You know?
Yeah,
like we could throw a lot of money at it, and then it would, you know, ramp up that economic failure part of the Baked Alaska of failure that we were talking about earlier. So we're kind of at that stage. We're trying to figure out who is it, because, you know, actually quite a few men and some, you know, younger men have listened to it. They thought it was really funny. They love it. But they wouldn't buy it. You know what I mean? They wouldn't buy it. And so that's the kind of the thing. We don't know if anyone will buy it. And then if they do, it only costs $7.95. So even if, you know, even if lots of people buy it, you know, we're talking about enough money to go to the movies.
And maybe buy something at 7-Eleven beforehand to eat at the movies, because you can't eat at the snack bar because that thing's too expensive. So, okay, I will put my prodigious, you know, brain on how you can get this divorce CD out there in front of the masses and maybe make the market, because there's two options, you know. You listen to what the market wants, or you make the market, you lead the market by giving them something they didn't know they needed until it arrived out there.
Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, I tried, like, when I tried to, I tried that when I tried to get you to be host of Women Are Not Funny. That sounds exactly, I kind of learned my lesson, darling. I don't know that, you know, that's, you know, but anyway, but the cheerful good news is it's really fun. It's very quirky, and Paula did a wonderful job, and one of the things that we did was we licensed a song that she wrote, and it was a very successful song of hers earlier in last decade called I'd Fall in Love with Anyone, and so that's part of it too, and it's kind of my anthem, if you will, and so I'm very happy with the little piece. Mm-hmm. And if this turns out to be a magnanimous failure, well, I mean, that won't please me. Who am I kidding? But at the same time,
it's more material, Kay. That's all. I mean, really, it's more material.
It is more material. And, you know, there's always that. But I don't know. You know, I don't know how far we went on the Accomplish Something initiative. One of the people that I've met in the last 6 months or so is a man named David Brown, who plays Dr. Blogstein on a weekly radio show, which is Blog Talk Radio's most popular comedy show. And he's been doing it for about 2.5 years. And his day job, he's a PR guy in New York City for HarperCollins. And his show is quite amusing. And he had a co-host for most of those 2 years. Her name is Dangerous Lee, which I think that is a great name, don't you?
That's a great name. Perfect.
And but she's gone. He canned her. And the reason that he canned her was that one time one of their guests didn't show up, and she got a little bit interested in emptying her dishwasher during the show. And he couldn't, you know, he thought that was very unprofessional for the radio co-host to be emptying her dishwasher during the show. But, you know, the reason I bring it up is that I was impressed by it. I mean, I still am. The whole idea that we could have a radio show and empty our dishwasher at the same time, I mean, mm-hmm. to me, that is the essence of modern women.
Yeah, and I'm just sitting here thinking, why didn't you say, in all candor, he canned her? Ha ha. Because that.
Well, because, you know, I'm.
Framework.
Yeah, I know. You have to go for the puns. You know, I'm a little more highbrow than that. But, Michelle, despite that, I adore you, and you know that. And I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on Women Are Not Funny. And I'm so glad that you are a featured regular guest and that we'll be seeing you again. Because as I told a gentleman yesterday, I can sit down in 2 minutes and come up with 20 things I want to talk with Michelle about.
Well, my door is always open to you. My phone I will always take your call, which, you know, in Washington is the highest praise. I will always take your call, Kay. And thanks so much for having me as a guest. And I look forward to any other time.
Lovely.